This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. Legislation that would effectively ban the video app TikTok is making its way through Congress. Tens of millions of Americans use the app regularly, either as producers or viewers. And it's not at all clear that the proposed law would survive the inevitable First Amendment challenges. Cato's Jennifer Huddleston and Paul Matsko detail the state of the debate. Paul, help me understand, because I am not a TikTok person. As I've said before, I watch two-week-old TikToks on Instagram like an adult. Help me understand why this is such a radically different kind of app than what we're used to.
It's interesting because TikTok is not the first short-form video app. We had YouTube. There are other competitors now that have tried to imitate TikTok. Instagram.
I'm more of a Vine guy.
You're more of a Vine guy, yeah, which the late departed Vine. So it's not new in that sense, but what is new is the way in which it uses algorithmic discovery. It uses AI, it uses machine learning to very, very accurately predict what you're interested in. So it looks at how much of a video you watch, what videos you engage with, and learns from that and says, hey, look, we get that Caleb Brown is obsessed with capybaras based on how much of a video about capybaras he watched. So we're going to serve him hashtag capybara content until he is sick of it. So it's not really the format that is truly novel, because like you said, there were predecessors and there are alternatives. It's the acuity of the algorithm. And any user can tell you it is eerily good at identifying what you like. And so it's very enjoyable to use for people who put time into teaching the algorithm what they like.
I made the mistake of liking several videos that were pasta dishes being prepared on Instagram a long time ago. And for some time period after that, I was being served pretty much nothing but videos about people making pasta.
Well, and TikTok is just, the algorithm is better than Instagram's. And that's, you know, I'm sure of great concern to Instagram's to Facebook and, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and its owners. But it's being outcompeted by just being better at serving up people content they're interested in.
Jen, why is this such a thorny matter legally in the United States? The idea that this company ought to be, I don't know, bought out by Americans, ought to be more located in the U.S. where a huge number of their consumers are. Why is this such a big deal to certain people in Congress and in states?
Why it is a big deal to users should be that it's a pretty likely First Amendment violation. Why this has become a big deal to Congress, why are we seeing a push to potentially ban TikTok, largely comes down to some debates about, is TikTok a national security risk? Is TikTok tied close enough to China through its parent company, ByteDance, that there needs to be some sort of government intervention into this app? However, this is also occurring at a time when there is a much broader debate about tech policy and particularly about the actions of young people online. TikTok is very popular with younger users, with Gen Z and millennial users, and even, you know, some of the older Gen Alpha users now that are starting to come online. It is less of a kind of traditional social media app the way that we saw previously with Facebook and Instagram. But we are seeing this kind of broader question of young people's use of technology and young people on social media come up as well. So when the TikTok issue comes up, you have this confluence of different policy events, concerns about China, concerns about young people online, concerns about certain biases and algorithms from all sorts of social media platforms that have been expressed by policymakers, concerns about the competition in the tech policy landscape that have been expressed by various policymakers, all coming together and kind of fueling this debate.
Getting around the First Amendment is increasingly difficult in the United States of America because we have such a strong tradition, at least in the last 100 years or so, of the Supreme Court really representing the First Amendment really well as a very robust, broad-based amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The other side of this really is, to me, the big problem here is the right to consume information, not the right to speak. It's the corollary right that should concern most of us here. Is that right?
Well, it's both, right? So about 170 million Americans use TikTok. About half of them have posted a video to TikTok. So we're talking about more than a quarter of Americans. It is both those rights. It is their right to speak. They created these videos. So if you ban TikTok, those videos would go away. And then, yes, it's half of Americans, their right to consume this content, to listen to this speech, and they're choosing to do so. And so you're removing both rights for half of Americans and the direct right to speech for a quarter of Americans. And that dwarfs any other removal of speech in American history. You know, so we think about the big landmarks of censorship in U.S. history, things like the Alien and Sedition Laws, Second Red Scare, restrictions on the Postal Service. Well, in the first case, we're talking about 24 writers. In the latter cases, we're talking about a few thousand readers having their right to read and consume information being infringed upon. We're talking about a quarter to a half of Americans here, 170 million people. So any concerns about the First Amendment, this is like the extreme version of that. And so in theory, we should ratchet up the kind of barrier that should be cleared for that kind of impairment of free speech. There should be a high barrier of evidence and a high barrier of kind of national security interest that should be met before we do something this extreme.
What's the hard evidence here? Because I hear a couple of different things. One is that TikTok poses a national security threat because China. But the other is a little more mundane, and it's a criticism that I hear about platforms based in the U.S., which is we're being spoon-fed through this app information that is damaging to us on purpose. So to that extent, it doesn't seem like TikTok is special, at least with regard to that one criticism.
I mean, honestly, as a TikTok user, as a creator, I make TikToks, a lot of that is rooted in misunderstanding from non-users, people who don't really understand what the app is about, who often will dismiss the content as silly little dances at best. At worst, we'll frame it as, you know, fundamentally harmful propaganda, misinformation, and so on. And really just don't understand that it is such a large app with so many users and content that it's an everything app. You can find everything on there, from DIY tips to lifestyle tips to news and information. There's a whole medium of new news creators on apps like TikTok. And so there is, I think, a lot of that concern is rooted in people who don't understand what they're dealing with. To them, it's either silly dances or it's sinister propaganda, nothing in between.
I would just add that I think it's important to recognize that TikTok is being used in a lot of different ways as well. One of the cases we've seen it growing in terms of the way that some people are using it for search because they want that video forward information. Paul mentioned news, but also the way that, you know, we're continuing to see a number of different platforms evolve in the way we use them for communication. And this has been a part of the debate about, you know, in terms of identifying what the markets may be for different social media apps. I think it's important to remember that when we're talking about TikTok's users, that they've chosen this platform for a reason. They feel that this platform best serves their needs. And we should be concerned about people who act like if we get rid of TikTok, well, it's okay because there are all these other social media platforms that also do short form video. You can just move over to YouTube Shorts, or you can just move over to Instagram Reels, per your joke, Caleb, about watching, you know, old TikToks on Instagram.
Oh, it's not a joke.
But we wouldn't tolerate that in a more traditional media sense. We wouldn't say it's okay for the government to ban the Wall Street Journal or to ban the Times of London because you can still read the New York Times and you can still read the Miami Herald. We would be pretty aghast at the idea that you could intervene just because other newspapers exist, or that the government could shut down one particular bookstore or one particular publisher just because other publishers exist. It's still a harm to speech, and it's still taking away a venue for expression, as Paul talked about earlier.
How broad is what members of Congress, what are they seeking? How broad is it? And as you learn over and over, Jen, I'm sure, is that lawmakers writing about restrictions or mandates in tech, they actually, and I don't mean this critically, they don't know what they're talking about.
This latest proposal, and I say latest as of March 12th, because with the way tech policy moves, who knows, by the time listeners are listening to this, there could be more proposals, is a bit different than what we've seen in the past. And it's a bit different, and advocates of this proposal would be quick to point out, it's not technically a ban, it's a forced divestment, which may be splitting hairs when you look at what's actually going on under the hood, but will be quite relevant to any legal analysis should this proposal become law and face legal challenge. So what the bill would require is that certain companies with ties to certain foreign adversaries, as defined in the bill, would be forced to either divest to an approved company by the administration within 180 days, so 6 months of the bill becoming law, or otherwise are effectively banned in the U.S. from distribution, updating of these products. Now, that's also going to be really relevant because the onus of that isn't necessarily going to fall on TikTok itself. It's also going to fall on the companies that allow TikTok in their app store, you know, to block the update, to remove this product from the shelf, so to speak. So we're talking about the impact this could have on those companies as well if this forced divestment didn't occur. There's a lot of question about, could divestment occur in a way that would satisfy these terms? But we should still be really concerned about this idea that the government is intervening and telling a company who its owners must be, not only in the sense of not having foreign owners or foreign adversarial owners, but potentially approving the sale of this company to another company.
I'll add to that, that there's a certain sophistry that comes with the "it's not a ban" rhetoric. It's the threat of a ban if they fail to do something, if they don't sell their operations in one of their most promising markets to a direct competitor, only then is it functionally banned. But that's like telling someone, like, we don't like who you are hosting at your house. The youth are coming and being, you know, influenced in ways we don't approve of at your home. And so, look, we're not going to make you move out of town. You just have 60 days to sell your house to someone else, and you're not allowed to live here anymore, but we're not making you move. It's not a ban. That's just the stick that's accompanying this rather rotten looking carrot we're trying to feed you.
Do we have a sense, because, you know, we libertarians are always on the lookout for the bootlegger and the Baptist here, assuming for the moment that all of the national security concerns are borne out, you still have the US-based social media platforms that don't particularly care for TikTok having a big market share?
It's an interesting question for, I think, the more kind of progressive voices supporting the bill, which is, who do you expect to buy this application? If it's, you know, Facebook or Instagram or a social media competitor of some kind, well, you just made a very large social media company a much, much larger social media company. So that's kind of odd from an antitrust, anti-big tech perspective. So maybe it's someone who doesn't own the social media. It's a non-social media group of investors that would buy this forced divestment of TikTok, in which case we get back to the conversation of, is the difference between a divestment and a ban distinction without a difference, i.e., let's say the government didn't like Tesla becoming such a big car company, so they forced it to sell its U.S. operations to Fiat Chrysler. Do we really think Fiat Chrysler, the owner of the much maligned Jeep brand of cars, would do a good job running Tesla's production? I don't know about that. In the same way, a forced investment could lead to a new ownership, which may or may not run TikTok into the ground. So there's a lot of knock-on implications from even the forced sale.
Despite in his own administration previously trying a ban via executive order of TikTok that was struck down in the courts, former President Donald Trump actually came out pretty forcefully against banning TikTok, which may seem a bit surprising, but his comment was that this would just give more power to Mark Zuckerberg, who he is currently concerned about, as you know, are some other conservatives with regards to the way that they feel that social media apps like Facebook and Instagram are maligning conservatives or not allowing conservative voices to be heard. Paul and I could have a whole nother conversation on that underlying issue. But I think it's been interesting to see that some of these normally anti-social media voices have raised this kind of question of what would this actually do were we to lose this particular app to the market?
High-minded idealism from the former president.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. And here's the thing, too, though, is that it's worth bearing in mind that over 60% of ByteDance is owned by international investors. Actual Chinese investors are a minority interest in this company. So the idea of that this being a Chinese company is true in the sense that it's headquartered in China. There is the potential that the Chinese government could appeal to a 2017 national security law and force ByteDance to do unsavory things. But it's not just the Chinese company. It really is a multinational global company at this point. And if the Chinese government were to mess around with its investors, they have their own interests for pushing back, worried about the exposure risks of being tied up with, you know, communist propaganda or so on.
Jennifer Huddleston and Paul Matsko are research fellows at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please. Thank you for listening.